Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I lost my headphones inside of my own house this week. Has anyone seen them? I've turned the place upside down and I have no clue where they are. Hey, so this is a solo dump, and if you're new to Info Dumpies, or you've just joined us for your first solo dump, a solo dump is where Violet takes a little break and I come talk to you about something relating to autism and or ADHD. And you might be saying, well, Brianne, other than having both yourself, why are you doing that? That's because my job is peer support and an ADHD coach. So I get to talk to other lovely ADHDers all day and help them with things relating to executive function, unmasking, routines, breaking down big tasks, just being external support and structure. I love my job. I get to talk to some really great people every single day. And today, I'm going to share a little bit of that with you. Today, we're going to be talking about executive function. Now, executive function gets talked about a lot, jokingly, on the internet quite a bit, and conflated to be this one thing that's kind of like, executive function is how do boring thing good. When, in fact, executive function is split up into 12 different skills. Depending on who you ask, some people break it down into like 10. Today, for our purposes, we're going to do 12 because I do think the 12 makes sense. But yeah, we're going to talk about the different executive function skills, what they entail, ways you might be able to improve how you do those skills in particular, and ways to accommodate for yourself or get support on those things that you simply cannot improve because, hey, autism and ADHD are a disability, and you cannot executive function coach your way out of being disabled. My plan is to go through all 12 of them, but before I do, I also want to preface it with my own personal take on executive function. The folks who sort of helped come up with the concept of executive function, some of them quoted some outright fascists in other contexts as inspiration, and a lot of what is expected of people with executive function really goes back to the work ethic and individualism that was sort of born during the Protestant Reformation, which I could do an entire regular episode of Info Dumpies about all of the things that you can blame on the Protestant Reformation, much like, as an American, all of the things you can blame on Ronald Reagan. I personally do not believe that any one person can be quote-unquote good enough at all of these 12 skills to function on your own. I think that is a capitalist lie. I think we are meant to live in a village. We're meant to be in a community. We are meant to work collectively and work together. So some of my solutions for these are have a friend with you. And that's because literally no one, neurotypical or otherwise, is going to be able to do all of these things to the degree that capitalist society tells you you need to be able to. So both autism and ADHD can affect how easily you can handle some of these, and your own autistic traits and where they lie on their respective spectrums certainly have an effect on that. And when you're an ADHDer, sometimes the autism can hide some of the executive dysfunction that comes with ADHD. It's going to be different if you are here and you're like, I'm not autistic, I just have ADHD, or I'm autistic, I don't have ADHD. I think this still might be useful because these skills are things that I think both my autism and ADHD affect not quite equally. I know that ADHD certainly affects it more, but they both certainly affect my ability to engage in these executive function skills. So first, we're going to talk about the skill of metacognition. Now, metacognition is your awareness and ability to reflect on one's own cognitive processes. It's an understanding of one's own abilities and strategies for learning and task completion. So, like the root meta would suggest, this is your awareness of yourself. This is awareness of how you work. This is awareness of what strategies and what knowledge might be helpful to the task at hand. It's your ability to reflect on how well you're doing at something to see if you need to change your strategy. Metacognition is one that is really integral to learning, but I think also when you're teaching yourself a new skill, like, you know, I'm learning piano and I'm outsourcing some of my metacognition to my piano instructor until I know how to do things myself. And with tools that my piano instructor has given me, I've actually learned how to practice things in a way where she can kind of let go of the reins a little bit with how to help me work on a piece, because metacognition is part of the learning process. So metacognition has phases. So the first phase is planning. This is where you're asking yourself, what am I being asked to do? What is my goal? What strategies will I use? What strategies have I not tried before that might be helpful here? This is where you question what you have available. This is your brain's mise en place if you're doing cooking and you're getting all of your ingredients in order. This is you getting your mental ingredients in order to learn something or complete a task. The second phase of metacognition is monitoring. So this is what you're doing while you're trying to learn a thing or accomplish a task. This is where you ask yourself, is the strategy I'm using working, or do I need to try something different? This part can be difficult when you're autistic because our brains tend to be a little rigid. So changing what we're in the middle of doing can be really difficult. And personally, this is one where I have to deliberately make myself say, okay, is this really working, or do I need to do this a different way? There are other options. Next, there's evaluation. And this is what you do at the end of the task. You ask yourself, how did I do? What worked? What didn't work? How can I take what I learned from this task and apply it to other tasks in the future? This is where this becomes a learning experience. So you learn from how you performed on this individual task, and then you take that as part of your metacognition and apply that to things you're doing in the future. D is reflection. So this is really saying, what did I learn about myself during this task? So this can be where you figure out, okay, well, this part was really difficult for me, or I kicked ass at this part, or maybe I need some outside support on this next time. So like I mentioned with piano, this is where having an instructor or teacher can be helpful. The teacher can help with these metacognitive steps until the learner's able to start taking them on themselves. This is another area where autism may hide ADHD. So it's really common for autistic people to be autodidactic, and that's just a fancy word for saying good at teaching themselves. Obviously, it's not everybody, but a lot of us. This requires excellent metacognitive skills. So metacognition is something you can practice if you're really deliberate at things. Like I said, I have trouble because my rigid thinking comes up against the concept of changing my strategy. And sometimes that's an uphill battle, but something that can really help this is also journaling. Journaling, you can probably reflect a little more on how you did. You can kind of dump stuff, and not even journaling in a way that's like, dear diary. More like, okay, here is what I need to accomplish. Here are the things that I know might work. Here are things I've never tried before that might work. So a theme in this episode is me suggesting you have some admin time for yourself. I know most people don't have to make notes or mind map or you know, write things out before they're handling household tasks or, going on a work trip or figuring out what they're going to have for dinner. But when you've got a brain with ADHD or you're autistic or you got both of these, it's probably pretty helpful to have some administrative time because you've got a really busy brain. There's like a lot of stuff going on in there. So if you can write stuff out and dump it out of your brain, that can help you organize things better and help you with your metacognition. Number two is sustained attention. I ain't going to define this one because that's exactly what it says on the box. It's what it sounds like. If you have ADHD and you are not interested in the task at hand, this is going to be a pickle. It is. With ADHD, your brain treats these painfully boring or uninteresting tasks akin to something that might trigger fight or flight. If you've ever been in the middle of working on something and you find yourself falling asleep, but then you go try to take a nap and you're not actually tired, or you go move to try a different task you have to do and you're able to do that and you're not tired anymore, that's something called intrusive sleep, which is common with ADHD, and that's when you're trying to give sustained attention to something that your brain is so disinterested in, it straight up says, I'm going to save you from this. This is so boring. You should probably go to sleep now. So it is not your fault that sustained attention on things that your brain is not actively interested in is difficult. Oddly enough, for me, editing my own voice is something that frequently causes me to have intrusive sleep. So when I'm editing this episode, I'll probably have to take regular breaks and do something pretty stimulating, like eat a crunchy snack or eat something crunchy and spicy or take a bunch of breaks where I go on walks. But when I'm editing my own voice, sustained attention is an issue, and I just kind of expect that to happen. So I do that in much smaller doses. I do that in small chunks. I'm taking regular breaks. And yes, most people don't have to do this for tasks they don't find interesting, but I'm going to remind you once again, ADHD is a disability, so you'll probably have to do some things to accommodate for yourself because you cannot force yourself to be better at paying attention to things that your brain is just not interested in. Now, the one thing that you can do to help somewhat improve your sustained attention, and again, you will still be disabled. This isn't going to cure your ADHD, like some people might act like it does. Those people don't fucking have ADHD. And it's going to sound really annoying, but meditation. Meditation is going to help with a few of these things. And I swear there's a reason and there's actual neuroscience behind it. And it is not the kind of meditation that we expect you to suddenly be neurotypical, right? I've used this example before with clients because I filter things through my special interests. So we're going to filter this through my special interests of weightlifting. So have you ever seen a video of a weightlifter trying to, you know, do a squat with something really heavy, some real heavy weight on the barbell, and their legs are shaking? That is not their muscles struggling. More than likely, that's their central nervous system. Because if they're having to lift more weight than usual, their brain and their nervous system is trying to recruit more muscle fibers for the task than usual. And it's not something they've done a lot. They've not lifted this weight a lot. So one of the ways they get better at lifting that weight is doing so repeatedly, not because their muscles are necessarily getting bigger, which they will, but it takes time and a lot of effort and a lot of food to put on muscle. So they might be able to lift this weight with ease in a week's time, and they certainly haven't put on more muscle in that time. Well, what's happened? Their central nervous system has actually created new neural pathways and started recruiting more muscle fibers with the same cells in order to lift that amount of weight. So with meditation, we're doing that same thing kind of, but with our ability to refocus on the task at hand. So when you're doing either mindfulness meditation, where your focused attention is on one particular thing, or you're doing a mindfulness meditation that is open awareness, both of those have been shown to improve sustained attention in humans and cause actual changes in the brain, much akin to a weightlifter and their central nervous system creating new neural pathways to, you know, do a clean and jerk or whatever lift they're doing. So with meditation, I know a lot of the time I used to take it really literally and get annoyed, and it's like, just ignore your thoughts, let your thoughts pass you by. Your thoughts are clouds, don't think of anything. And my brain's too busy for that. And it wasn't until I had someone with ADHD explain to me, the point is, you will get distracted. You will, you just will. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. The point is that when you are distracted, you redirect yourself to either your breathing or watching a candle flickering or whatever other thing, whatever flavor of meditation you're doing, it's the redirection is the thing. So getting distracted is part of the process, and you know that you're getting better at meditation when it feels like that takes less effort to do, much like lifting a shit ton of weight. So 3 to 5 minutes a few times a week. A lot of people will say do it every day. When you're an ADHDer, I don't expect you to remember to do something every single day, but if you can do it regularly, then hell, do it 3 or 5 times a week. whatever you can manage, so your brain can start making those neural pathways to get better and faster at redirecting your attention so you can focus on the things that might not be that interesting. Next is goal-directed persistence. It's number 3. That's your ability to keep working towards a goal when you get bored, distracted, or discouraged. This is the reason that a lot of us with ADHD will stop a new hobby quite quickly after realizing we aren't magically a prodigy at it. So that's why if we suck at something, it's like, fuck this, I'm never gonna do needlepoint again. Or fuck this, I'm done with skateboarding. We might have difficulty with goal-directed persistence. This is something personally, when my autism is overwhelmed, I do think that when I'm pretty exhausted, it does affect my ADHD and my goal-directed persistence is much less. Like, the kind of goal-directed persistence where if I see the Brita filter needs to be refilled and I was going to go refill my water, my brain is like, oh, life is so hard. I don't need to drink. Like, that kind of exhausted. So this is something I deal with, but it's sometimes a comical severity when my brain is just not wanting. My brain lacks the energy to do things. One thing that can help this is breaking down larger goals into smaller steps or even checkpoints. It can be like with podcasting, saying, okay, I have to get the new episode out. That's big. That's a lot. But just saying, okay, go sit down and record these notes on executive function skills. And then the next thing will be like, okay, let's clean up this audio. Let's get the sound quality good. Okay, let's spend 20 minutes listening through and editing the episode. Okay, tomorrow we'll spend another 20 minutes. And if I can break down the task in stuff that is way less demanding, where my goal is 20 minutes, or my goal is recording my notes on executive function skills. That makes it a lot easier, and that is a less lofty goal to reach. This can also really help the autism side of things when you experience PDA, like if you have PDA profile autism, which I could do a whole solo dump about, but it's known as pathological demand avoidance, which just sounds like a bitchy, catty name, but also it's called persistent drive for autonomy. This is something that helps me quite a bit with that, because you're making the task you need to do less demanding by breaking it down into smaller steps. Number 4 is time management. Again, this one is exactly what it sounds like. This can be extra hard when you have ADHD and you're autistic, which our perception of time is literally different. We don't feel time pass the same way that a neurotypical person is. We just don't. So it makes time management hard when our perception of time is so wonky. For me, another thing that actually affects my time management is dyscalculia, which I have. It often overlaps with ADHD and autism. It's one of the things that, you know, autistic kids get told they have a spiky skills profile a lot of the time. So mine was, you know, you're exceedingly good at anything involving words and language, but if it's math, Lord help you. Why are you not applying yourself? And I was. I just had a specific learning disability. But that also means that looking at numbers and time on a clock is really hard for me, and the numbers themselves carry very little tangible meaning in my brain. So this is something that I personally think is where we benefit from having both digital and physical planners. So both of these, once more. Having several layers of protection, essentially, for making sure that you are keeping track of your time is the thing that I found most helpful. So I physically write things down every week. I say, okay, this is what my week looks like. Here are the appointments I have with clients. Here are plans I have with my partners. Here are the basics of the week. Every evening, I spend like 5 minutes writing down the stuff I'm going to do the next day. But I also have my digital calendar where I have, again, my client appointments to make sure I don't fucking forget those. I have things I'm doing with my partners in the digital calendar, so I get reminders. And then I also have Calendly for work, which Calendly has all of my coaching client stuff in there. So I've got a triple layer of protection there to make sure that I am doing the things on the days I'm supposed to be doing those things at the correct time, because one calendar simply is not enough for me with my ADHD. Neurotypicals will be like, get a planner. And it's like, okay, I'm going to forget that shit exists tomorrow. And if you're autistic, also, something that I like to remind people of is you do not have to utilize every planner or digital thing or note-taking thing every single day. These are all tools for you to use. When you are ADHD, it is not realistic to expect yourself to stick to the same routine 100% of the time, because you're going to miss it one day and then never feel like doing it again if you shame yourself about it. If you tell yourself, okay, well, I miss my routine, but it does help me, and now I can fall back into that until I eventually, miss it for a day again, and it's going to be fine. We're shooting for getting things done in your routine most of the time, because perfection is unattainable. So something else that can help with time management is also deadlines, where you have the deadline, but you give yourself smaller checkpoints in between the deadline. So again, for myself, for podcasting, I have deadlines for recording an episode, for getting my audio cleaned up, for editing, for getting it ready to publish. For the audio drama stuff, I have deadlines for finishing a draft of a script, for having, my editor look over my script, for making my edits, for making the call sheets, for deciding who's going to be who, for sending that to the cast, for doing all of these things. I have a bunch of teeny tiny little deadlines that only I ever see to make sure I get this shit done on time. Because if I just said, record this episode by this day, that would not happen. It would simply not happen because I wouldn't have paced myself. So when you set a deadline, having smaller checkpoints to pace yourself between the time you're writing it and the time it's due is one of the ways that I make sure I stick on top of podcasting deadlines, because I have a lot of deadlines with podcasting, and I do not want to get you your episode late because I would feel awful about it. So I stick to them quite a bit. Another thing that can be helpful for time management are visual timers. You can find a lot of these online. Essentially, especially for me too, with dyscalculia, my brain has trouble seeing 20 minutes on a timer and conceptualizing how much I can get done in that time. But a visual timer will have like a block of color. Very often it's like a rainbow or, whatever cute colors. And it starts disappearing as your timer counts down. And I know it sounds silly, but saying, uh-oh, there's only like a quarter of this rainbow left, I need to hurry, that registers to our brains a lot more than I have 20 minutes until I need to go. Another thing that's helpful with time management is not filling your whole day with plans. A common thing I see with clients is that they don't leave time to transition in between tasks. And if you're autistic, this is, I would say mandatory. I know some people have jobs that don't allow them transition times, but if, for the love of God, if you can give yourself 10 to 15 minutes between doing and changing tasks, please do. Because having that time to transition between things is helpful. And if you're like, oh, I don't have trouble with transitions, do you have to sit in the car a little bit before you can go inside? You also need time to eat. You also need time to rest. Putting less in your day when you're planning your day rather than trying to fill the whole day is a point. I think the other thing autistic people very often miss too is you are not trying to account for every second of your day. This is not school, which I think is the only time we've really experienced routine outside of things we try to do ourselves. So when you are a kid in school, every second of your school day is accounted for, right? And that is not the goal, because ideally you get home and every second of that wasn't accounted for. So as an adult, when you are trying to work on time management, understanding that you do need to have part of your day that is not accounted for is important. The other thing I like to do, which is I learned is pretty common for people with dyscalculia, is use music as a timer. So I have trouble understanding what 45 minutes feels like, but I do know that is about an episode of Buffy. So TV helps me too. I do know that that is about the length of Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge by My Chemical Romance. I do know that I have a 15-minute playlist for when I'm showering, so I know how long I've been in the shower. When the playlist is over, I know I've been in there for 15 minutes. Music can help you time things because I have a much better feeling of how long a song feels like, especially if there are parts of the song that I recognize as being close to the end or in the middle or something. So try using music to time yourself sometimes. It helps me quite a bit. Number 5 is working memory. Working memory is your brain's temporary storage space for using and manipulating information. So I like to describe it as a chalkboard in your brain where you write the next few things you're going to be working on. Both ADHD and autism can make this more difficult in their own unique ways. For me, sometimes new sensory input I get will erase the whiteboard in my brain because that sensory thing has just overtaken all of the stuff I was trying to think about. This is one of the reasons that visual planners and visual steps for things are really common for autistic kids, and I don't think they should be exclusive to autistic kids. I think if you need something to visually remind you of the steps of your skincare routine or the steps for making coffee, that's helpful. When I'm really burnt out and I'm in autistic burnout, working memory stuff can be more difficult because something like making coffee can go from feeling like, okay, there are 5 steps to making coffee to, God, there are like 14 steps to making coffee because my brain is so tired and I forgot to put coffee in, or I didn't put the filter in, or I, you know, forgot to make sure that I cleaned out the carafe, or I forgot to any of the steps. It becomes much more difficult when I'm in autistic burnout. So this is another time where I'm going to say, write things down. Write things down as much as you can. If I'm having a particularly difficult time and I know I need to clean as part of my self-care, I will write down every blessed step of cleaning my bathroom. If that seems too daunting, I'll make them even smaller. Whenever you can automate things, that's also really helpful. Automation of things can just take that out of your brain. And one app I'll actually recommend is Dubbie, D-U-B-B-I-E. It's made by an autistic and ADHD couple, and they have videos where they take you step by step through deep cleaning your bathroom, through going through all of your mail, through cleaning out your closet. And I like it because it takes what's helpful about body doubling quite a bit, but you don't have to have a live person you're interacting with. So I have quite a few clients who really like that app, and you can pause it at different chapters. So if you're working on one step, your working memory doesn't have to remember the next few steps because in Dubbie, it's done it for you. So number 6 is planning. Planning often requires you to be doing okay in the other areas of executive function in order to plan, which is a real bitch. Planning can be difficult with both autism and ADHD because our brains have less synaptic pruning they've gone through than brains that are not autistic and or ADHD. But that means we tend to make more connections that may or may not be helpful in the planning process, which makes it difficult to decide what to do when. Where we also, both neurotypes, tend to be bottom-up processors. So we have to understand why we're doing these little itty-bitty steps for the purpose of the big goal. So if someone says, you know, print out all of these pamphlets, you need to understand what the pamphlets are for and what we need to gain by printing out these pamphlets, because you won't know, you know, are they in color? Are they back in front? What are the other details of this? I need to understand these little itty-bitty steps and the big picture in order to make it happen. So this is one of the reasons that both ADHDers and autistic people get told we argue a lot when we're asked to do something, because we're asking questions that to other people they think are common sense and they don't understand why we'd be asking those things. But that can often make planning more difficult because we do need the context of all of the details and the big picture in order to go for the bottom up accomplishing a task. One of my personal methods I like to do when I'm getting stuck planning something is write down the individual things I know need to happen on sticky notes and then visually arrange those on something like a door. I do this for plotting out audio drama. I also do it, you know, I've done it for planning a trip. I've done it for, you know, when we were moving, I did that to help plan some things because there I can visually see the different steps. I can even draw a little picture if that helps me, if just having words on the paper doesn't help. But that is a way I can move things around until they make more sense. So planning can be difficult, but this is another area where also having someone else there to help you plan can be helpful. So having a friend over, and even if the friend is not involved in the thing you're planning, just running it by someone else can be helpful in the planning process. So planning is one of the hard ones that neurotypicals use things like event planners and wedding planners and, you know, travel agent was a whole ass job. So planning is hard, and if you have trouble with planning, it's something even neurotypicals have trouble with. So outsourcing what you can, if you can, or just having a friend over to run your ideas by, even if the plan affects them not at all. Like, have your friend over, say, hello, I've made cookies. Will you sit here while I tell you about my plan I have? And that's community care. That's taking care of each other. That's one thing that you can do with the help of another person quite a bit easier. So number 7, prioritization, is directly related to why you might also have trouble planning. Autism can make this more difficult because we're making more mental connections than most. ADHD and autism are both interest-based neurotypes, so folks without either have importance-based brains. So to them, prioritization is often a facet of what they consider common sense yet again. But to an ADHD or autistic brain, it can be hard to decide what's important because your brain is focused on what's interesting. And it's also making extra connections going, well, what about this? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? So this is another thing where getting outside input can be really helpful because someone might say, yeah, I know you're thinking about that, but what about blank? And just having someone else that could help redirect you and maybe doesn't have the stress of trying to prioritize these things on their brain as well can be helpful. When I have a big list of things to do, sometimes something called an Eisenhower matrix can be helpful. You can find free PDFs of this, but it's basically like a 4-quarter little square grid you make to decide what tasks you're going to do now, what tasks you're going to schedule for later, what tasks you're going to outsource to someone else, and which ones you're just not going to do. So it's an easy, quick way. Once you look it up, you can draw your own matrix pretty easily, but they make PDFs you can also just fill out if you want to do that all digitally. Writing things down, again, like you're going to get tired of me saying that, but writing things down can help prioritize things. So asking yourself, what is my goal? What do I hope to have accomplished at the end of this? How will I know that I've accomplished this task? Like, what criteria means I'm done? What are the steps needed to accomplish this? Do these steps have to be done in a specific order? So just asking yourself some questions about the stuff you're trying to prioritize can help. Number 8 is organization. If you're an ADHDer, the first thing I'm going to tell you is please do not let your autism create an organizational paradigm that your ADHD can't keep up with. Autism, a lot of the time, autistic people love creating systems for things. And there are a certain section of us on the spectrum who get great joy out of trying to optimize systems. But the problem is when you also have ADHD, ADHD can't possibly keep up with a system that is that detailed and nuanced. So this is where getting help with prioritization can also help the organization. All of these play into each other. Organizing info for me is more about making sure it's all in one place and I can easily access it. So it can be info, it can be my sock drawer. Like for me, I know that all of my shirts, my t-shirts collection, they reside in 2 drawers in my dresser. They are all there. I know they are. Now, are the inside of the drawers the most organized? No. We don't talk about that though, because I know if I'm looking for a shirt, I know it's in those 2 drawers. Like, I know that's where the shirts live. So that's the kind of simple organization that when you have ADHD, executive function really needs. I think readjusting what you consider to be organized is helpful, because social media, again, makes you think that organization means everything has to be in numerical and color order, and everything has to have its own individual container. And for organization, do not go buy that organizational container. Do not go to the container store. Don't even set foot in the container store unless you know you need this type of container for a blank item. This is me talking to your ADHD directly. Put your ADHD on the phone. Buying the organizational thing before you know what you're going to use it for will not help you. Now you'll just have an extra box that you don't know what to do with. Okay, babe? You got it. So for organization, simple it up. Keep things simple, whether it's information or your t-shirts, your underwear. Just make sure that it is in one place where you can find it. And even if it's a little messy inside of that one place where you have everything, that's totally fine. This is another time where I'm going to say having administrative time before you start the task is just as important as working on the task itself. So getting yourself organized and writing things out so you don't have to rely on your working memory to remember how you've decided to organize things, it's a really helpful tool. So if you have some administrative time just to plan things out beforehand, that can really aid in your organizational skills. So number 9 is task initiation. It's what it sounds like. It's getting started on things. This can be extra hard if you aren't interested in a task. So if you're not interested in the task, it's going to feel like, you know, Jigsaw has told you to eat your own butt, or a bomb's going to go off. It's like, well, I don't want to eat my own butt. I don't want to look at this Excel spreadsheet. This sucks ass. I hate this. I don't want to get started on it. Autism also can make task initiation difficult when you are dealing with autistic inertia. And autistic inertia, I could, again, do a whole solo dump on, but essentially, autistic people take more energy to get up and going and off the ground, but once we are going and we get stopped abruptly, that can be really jarring for us, which is why we need transition time. So sometimes I will just feel stuck sitting in one place and know I desperately need to go do something. And then do something could be pee. And I have trouble getting myself to get up to go pee because of autistic inertia. So when that joins forces with ADHD, task initiation can be really difficult. So there are certain things that get ADHD interested in working on a task, and there are things you might be able to manipulate if you're having trouble getting started on something. So ADHD loves interest, novelty, challenge, urgency, and passion. So can you make the task more interesting? This is where gamifying things helps some people. I know someone who roller skates to clean the house, because does it make cleaning house more difficult? Yes. Does it make it more interesting? Also, yes. So they're actually cleaning the house. Does it take longer? Yeah, it probably does, but they weren't going to get started on it otherwise. Novelty is also something that can help when your ADHD is having trouble working on a task. So doing it in a new place, if it's a task you can do anywhere you want, doing it in a different outfit. I know someone who wears a wizard outfit in order to get some tasks done at the computer. Challenge also helps. So this is something I do a lot for myself. I will give myself a timer and see how much I can get done in a certain amount of time. Or I will set myself self-limitations. So if I have to cook, I will play Chopped in my own kitchen and tell myself, you have to use these basket ingredients, except I don't do the absolute sick shit they do on Chopped, but still, you get it. I'm playing Chopped in my head. Ted Allen is there. It's fun. I want to impress Alex Guarnaschelli. Urgency also can help, but this is the one that's dangerous, because when ADHD relies on urgency and you miss a deadline at one point and no one has killed you for missing the deadline, urgency loses a little of the stank and your ADHD only gets pushed by urgency for so long. So me timing myself is another way I sort of create this artificially. Passion is the final one, and when it comes to things like doing things for work, passion is the one I just don't think you can manufacture. So being passionate about something certainly helps. So if you have ADHD and you're thinking about looking for a new job, passion is definitely something I would look for in whatever job you're doing. But if it's like doing dishes, I don't think we're going to make you passionate about doing dishes. So task initiation is something where I personally find body doubling helpful. So setting a date with a friend and lowering your expectations of what starting the thing looks like. So just telling a friend, hey, do you want to sit here and play Animal Crossing while I work on this? Your friend doesn't even have to be working too. You just have to tell your friend and get some outside accountability and outside structure to say, hey, when you come over and you're hanging out and you're playing Animal Crossing, I am supposed to be applying for jobs, or I am supposed to be applying for PhD programs, or I am supposed to be setting doctor's appointments, blah, blah, blah. Just setting a date with a friend can help with a task initiation because you know that's what the friend is there for. And you get bonus points if that's a friend who will say, you know, bitch, I see you on Wikipedia. That is certainly not setting a doctor's appointment. Get back on task. I am that friend. So if you have a friend who will also, you know, not be an asshole, but kind of monitor you to make sure you're actually doing the thing that you set the date to have them over for, that's really a good tactic. I have a weekly body doubling session where I get all of my client notes done for the week on Monday, because my body doubling partner over Zoom, he just knows that's what I'm working on. We also, if you are in the Mix No More Discord server, have body doubling every Monday in the afternoon, and we just tell each other in the chat what we're going to be working on, and we have an hour to get work done, and we let each other know, this is what I got done. And it's a gentle way to help. Number 10 is mental flexibility. If you're autistic, babe, we can't do a whole hell of a lot with this one. Like, we're just not that mentally flexible. There's a certain point where this is part of the disability, and it is what it is. And of course, like every autistic trait, this exists on its own spectrum. So some of us will have the ability to be more flexible than others. But rigidity in how we do things is part of what makes us autistic. So this is something I really have to work around and just kind of accept that I am not mentally flexible and try to set as many boundaries as I can to help myself not get super distressed. For me, that looks like scheduling time to make changes. So this is where deliberate metacognition stuff also comes in. I check in with myself when I'm doing my admin time to see, hey, is the way I've been approaching this task been helpful? Do I need to change how I'm doing it? How would I change how I'm doing it? So I have deliberate times, and I do every quarter, I also have a little date with myself to evaluate how my current routine is going and seeing if it's actually stressing me out more than anything. And I can make small adjustments so I'm not changing everything all at once. Having a friend, someone who, you know, a friend who's quite logical and that you kind of trust as an adult, I guess, be an outside helper to help you get out of your own head can be really, really a disability accommodation, essentially, with this. Because very often I'll tell myself, well, I can either do this or do that. And, you know, one of my partners will be like, well, have you considered option C? And I was like, well, I didn't consider an option C. I only considered these two things. Interesting. You have access to knowledge I do not have access to. So mental flexibility is something where I sometimes need to borrow someone else's mental flexibility to help bust me out of my own rigid thinking. Number 11 is response inhibition. This is managing impulses, which can be hard for both the ADHD and autism. There are some folks who claim that response inhibition is something that can be trained in children, but from what I've found, there doesn't seem to be a lot of studies to support much of a change with this training. This is another area where meditation can be helpful because you might be able to give yourself some buffer time between getting the impulsive thought and doing the impulsive thing. Like just some practice with that time. But this is another time where having another person around you can also be helpful. So there's a theme, and it's having other people with you. Like I said, we're meant to live in villages. So this is where having other people near you can help response inhibition. And number 12, and it's the one that I'm working on a lot of the time, and that is emotional control. Once again, I am so sorry, but meditation can be helpful. I feel like a jerk just recommending that several times, but it does help you get a buffer between noticing that you're feeling something and acting on that feeling. And it can also help you notice when you're getting overwhelmed a little faster, which when you're autistic is really important, because if you're overwhelmed, you're on the road to a meltdown. Understanding your emotional triggers is helpful. For me, frustration is a big one. If you're someone with a uterus, just understanding this everything is going to be harder as far as emotional control in your luteal phase is just part of it. So if I'm in my luteal phase, my expectations of my emotional control and working on a frustrating task, I lower the bar for myself. If I get through it without feeling like flipping a table, I think I've done okay. Something else that helps is finding ways you know you find efficient or helpful for processing emotions outside of when you're focused on a task. So things that help you process your emotions when you're not working on a frustrating task will help you because you don't have this sort of backlog of frustration and anger and overwhelm when you are sitting down to work on your budget for the month. Again, I'm sorry for this one, but exercise can help emotional regulation too. Like Elle Wood said, exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people don't kill their husbands. She was right. Happy people also don't want to yeet their computer when software isn't behaving the way you want it. Exercise does help with that. And if you're autistic, exercise also can be really regulating for your nervous system as far as preventing meltdowns also. So exercise, and it doesn't have to be this very loaded, you know, fitness culture sort of exercise. It can be dancing around the house with your dog. It can be riding a Razor scooter. It can be, I don't know, playing Dance Dance Revolution. It can be, you know, one of my favorites was a Skip It in front of the TV. I'd be incredibly high with my Skip It watching Buffy, which was, that's life, that's living. But exercise can help with emotional regulation as well. And routines. Tasks are less stressful when you know you're putting in some work on them before they're actually due regularly. So emotional control is much less of a burden when you are not really close up to the deadline and having to do work that is not your best work and you know it and you're rushing through it and you've been procrastinating. The emotional control is easier when you aren't relying on stress right up, balls up on a deadline trying to get that done. So routines and making sure you put some work in on it regularly before the thing is due helps with the emotional control. So like for me with podcasting, I do some fiction writing every single day. Every single day I'm working on it because I have so much fiction writing I need to do that even if I get, you know, 100 words done one day, I still got more done than I did the day before. So I have some days where all my brain can kind of shit out as 100 words I feel good about. And then I have some days where it's like, wow, 4,000 words. What was the deal today? But it all comes out in the wash. But I know that I'm doing regular work on it. So all of it will get done. And I don't have that emotional stress of being right up against a deadline. And this is another one where having someone you care about near you can be helpful. And this doesn't have to be a human. Having a pet near you can do this. One of the reasons I adopted Moogie, my sweet little Chihuahua mix, was because I had lost my sweet senior boys the past years before. And when my last senior boy had crossed over the rainbow bridge, I realized that having a little mammal who wants to hang out with me and will hang out while I'm not feeling great helps my emotional regulation quite a bit. And there's some science to back that having another mammal near you and having that co-regulation, even if it is not another human being, is extremely, extremely helpful for emotional regulation. So having some time with your dog or your cat can also help with the emotional control part. So most of my workday, Moogie is in my lap. If you're one of my clients, Moogie has crawled up in my lap in the middle of a session before. So having a loved one or someone else with you can help. But yeah, those are the 12 executive function skills. Please do not give yourself a hard time if you have difficulty with these. Nobody has everything to do all of these to the degree that society expects us to. If you take anything away from this, it's write shit down, have administrative time for yourself, and get other people involved. They don't have to do the task for you, but they can be there with you because we are meant to accomplish these things together. Nobody does anything all by themselves. And since this is a solo dump, I'm going to go ahead and take care of the housekeeping section. First, I'm going to let you know about a mutual aid opportunity. Funds for Wadi is a collective that are raising money for a young Palestinian man named Wadi. Wadi lives in a tent with 7 of his family members. Funds for Wadi on Instagram runs raffles to help earn money for his family to get the very, very expensive food in Gaza that they need to survive, and their current goal is to help Wadi get the funds for a new tent. So if you would like to help Wadi, there is a link in our show details to the Chuffed campaign for Wadi and his family, and there's also a link to the Funds for Wadi Instagram page where they run regular raffles for him and his family. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Anarchista, Bethany Glass, Carl Brooks, Chamberlain Foreman, Fintago, Dave Perrell, Gus, Helen Clifford, Janice Weston, Kay Genius, Kate Michigoose, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Lutzi, Megan E., Natasha Neves, Nunya B., Percy, Rachel Rachelson, Randy Lovings, and Sewing Seraph. Now, if you want to help us out, you can tell other people about Info Dumpies. Do you know an ADHDer who could benefit from this episode? Do you know an autistic person who's really into Tamiya four-wheel drive race cars that Violet did an episode on? Do you know an autistic person who is really into Bela Lugosi's Dracula and would want to listen to my buddy Bobby's Ears episode about Bela Lugosi? Share about the show. We don't have ads. Ever will. Most we'll do is promote our own shit or boost mutual aid opportunities. And we don't take paid advertisements, so we're not paying to advertise our shows elsewhere. So we grow entirely by word of mouth. So you help us more than you know when you tell other people about the shows we do here at Mixnomer. I'd also like to ask you to check out Murphy Bay Magic, which is our new audio drama. It is a spinoff to your old one, Today's Lucky Winner. But it is done in such a way where if you didn't listen to the almost 100 episodes of Today's Lucky Winner, you're still going to be fine listening to Murphy Bay Magic. I tried to write it as though it was the angel to Today's Lucky Winner's Buffy, so to speak, if that makes sense to you. And if you can tell other people about Murphy Bay Magic, how well a show does in the first few episodes, the young life of a show can really help it get some traction. So if you listen to Murphy Bay Magic and you want to tell some folks about it, you want to like it, leave a sweet review, subscribe, do whatever you want. That's going to be dummy thick monthly episodes on the first of every month. So if you can tell people about that and Info Dumpies, you would help us more than you know. Subscribing to Info Dumpies also helps us. It gets us more action in the algorithms on your podcatcher of choice. It makes us more active in your podcatcher of choice. So if you want to subscribe to our shows, that helps us out more than you realize. If you're in a place to help us monetarily, you'll also find a link to our Patreon page in the show details. And that has rewards starting at just $1 a month. And it gets rewards for anything we do here at Mixnomer. And then if you want to hang out with us, it costs you nothing. But in the show details, there's a link to our Discord server, which has the best fucking vibes. I love our Discord server. We do regular events. We play games. We have craft nights. It's just a fun hang. It's a chill time. And I am always just so overcome with what absolute sweethearts the podcasts we make have attracted. Yeah, it makes me very happy that just the sweetest people seem to join the Discord server and listen to our shows. I'm very proud of that. Oh, it is such a nice gang of folks. But that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.